Welcome to the HealthLinks podcast, presented by the HealthLinks Family of Services. I'm your host, DJ Thatcher. Now, we engage in conversations about the medical and health landscape of South Carolina, and yet I'm not sure that we've ever engaged in this conversation. We're on beautiful Daniel Island in Charleston at the Kluver Psychiatric Group, joined by Dr. Jeffrey Kluver. Doctor, welcome to the HealthLinks podcast.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
You know, as a medical professional, in reviewing your website, now even I was shocked by the statistic that mental illness is the number one disease worldwide, affecting one out of five people. What are you doing with the Kluver Psychiatric Group in your own corner of the world to address that?
So, with mental illness as being so common, even in a place like Charleston, where there are a number of mental health professionals, there simply aren't enough. I get calls from all over the state throughout the day. People are looking for psychiatrists, therapists, other mental health professionals. And so here at Kluver Psychiatric Group, we have started with a psychiatrist and a therapist and are slowly expanding so we can continue to meet the need, not just here in the Charleston area, but even throughout the state.
It sounds like that's a good thing, though, the fact that people are reaching out, there's a demand for service, because, of course, there is a stigma to mental illness and seeking care. But what kind of roadblocks do you see with people in seeking help?
In the 20 years that I've been practicing psychiatry, I've certainly seen the stigma lessen over time. People are far more likely to talk about it openly, ask for help. The stigma is still there, make no mistake, but it is less. And even if a person who needs help is not inclined to ask for it, family members are usually more inclined or motivated to help, you know, help them access treatment. Unique to the Charleston area and South Carolina in general is also an influx of population from all over the country. And it's really interesting, but it feels like and it seems like a lot of our patients coming from out of state bring with them even less stigma. They have been getting psychiatric care for years, either medications or therapy, and that certainly seems to help spread the word as they move in and interact more with their neighbors and friends. So we definitely see a reverberation of us treating a patient, working with them, getting them better, and that becomes a referral source for us. They tell their friends, their family, the benefits that they got out of getting treatment, often for the first time. We have a lot of people who have been suffering, pushing through, powering through their mental illness or addiction issues for years, and managing to function but not functioning well. And they get treatment and they see how much better they can feel and how much better they can function. And that is the best advertisement we can have. Their family and friends see that immediately.
Wow. I know a key element of your practice is that everything is science-based. And tell us more about that. I mean, just like other specialties, of course.
Sure. Just like any specialty, there is an abundance of evidence and data in psychiatry that tells us how best to diagnose and treat each type of mental illness out there. That being said, the brain is far more complicated than any other organ in the body. It is something really we're just beginning to understand. So while we use data to drive everything we do and rely on the research and the science, that changes daily in psychiatry. So it's imperative that we keep up with all of the new data and information that's out there.
Now, you're a psychiatrist. There are clinical psychologists and other types of mental health professionals as well. What are some of the differences among those?
Yeah, so psychiatrists are medical doctors. So to become a psychiatrist, after going to undergraduate, I went to medical school. After that, it is a minimum of 4 years of additional residency training in psychiatry. Some of my colleagues have completed additional years beyond that to be trained, especially to treat children and adolescents, older patients or treat addictive disorders. With that background and training, psychiatrists are best equipped to do diagnostic evaluations. We are able to prescribe medications, as well as work with patients to do things like therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, insight-oriented therapy. Psychologists are PhDs, or what we call PsyDs. They are generally equipped to do more of the therapy work that we do in psychiatry. There are a number of psychologists that are especially trained for specific types of mental illness as well. And a lot of my psychology colleagues are very invested and involved in doing research at places like MUSC here in Charleston. Other types of mental health professionals include social workers. There are two social workers who work with me here in Kluver Psychiatric Group. They primarily do therapy, individual therapy, couples therapy. Increasingly, there are also nurse practitioners and physician's assistants who are trained especially in psychiatry, and they are able to prescribe medications under the supervision of a psychiatrist. There are also licensed therapists that provide another layer of treatment, another opportunity and an option for people to get therapy.
So there are a lot of professionals around, and yet still not enough, are there? There's a shortage of mental health professionals, just like other medical professionals, correct?
Correct, yes. With one in five people in the world suffering from some mental illness, you can do the math and realize just how many mental health professionals are needed in any one area. Those illnesses can range from mild to moderate anxiety that maybe the person is still working and functioning, but not functioning as well as they could, to more severe illnesses like bipolar and schizophrenia that can be truly debilitating if not treated aggressively and appropriately. That also includes addiction and substance use disorders are extremely common anywhere. And there is an additional layer of stigma that seems to persist around addictive disorders. So while people are increasingly inclined and have less hesitation to get treatment for anxiety and depression, there's a little more stigma that comes along with patients who are suffering from bipolar and schizophrenia. And the highest layer still exists around substance use disorders. There's an enduring myth that substance use is simply a choice and that people just can stop using at any time. And all of the research and data tells us otherwise. It's an illness like any other illness that we treat.
Well, Dr. Kluver, tell us about yourself. I know you did undergraduate at Notre Dame, medical school at Vanderbilt, your residency at Medical University of South Carolina here. Your father was a dentist. Why psychiatry?
So I think my father was hoping I'd stick with the mouth and go into dentistry. However, going into medical school, you're already on a different trajectory. Right. When I went to medical school, psychiatry was not on my radar. I pictured myself being an orthopedic surgeon, actually enjoyed my urology rotation. And then third year of medical school, did my first psychiatry rotation. I can still remember the first patient. It was captivating, so interesting. And the thing that really got my attention was how sick someone was when I first saw them in the clinic or in the hospital, and how the treatments worked. Part of the stigma around psychiatry comes from this concept that people can just either get better on their own or that they don't get better at all. And neither of those things are true. Mm-hmm. The treatment works and people get better. And that is the most rewarding thing, to see someone come in and suffering and really having been told for years that they just need to snap out of it, or that there's nothing that can be done, to employ these evidence-based treatments, see the patients get better, see their lives change. It was captivating. It was something I could not turn away from, and it has been just an incredible journey ever since.
your website mentions that one of your goals, of course, is to have patients seek a remission of their condition, which is a term that we always associate with cancer. You're in remission. Is there really a cure for most mental health problems, or is it something that often requires ongoing treatment for a lifetime?
I actually like the comparison to cancer. That is the way we approach treatment in psychiatry. We don't have cures, but similar to cancer, we do have the ability to put your illness and symptoms into full remission, and that's the goal. I have a number of patients that come to me who have improved with the treatment that they're receiving, but they're not in remission. And I tell them that's the goal. Similar to cancer, that cannot always be achieved, but that should always be the goal. Also similar to cancer, once those symptoms and the illness is in remission, it requires ongoing monitoring, maintenance treatment, and often ongoing medication treatment to ensure that those symptoms stay in remission. We can often lower doses, remove some medications or treatments, but we need to be vigilant and begin treatment at the first sign of relapse.
So going back, you've been in practice about 20 years, and most of that was hospital-based. 2 years ago, you opened this beautiful practice. Tell us more about the hospital-based psychiatry and then why you made the decision to come into a solo practice. Or group practice, I should say.
Sure. Like many people who go into psychiatry, we are really drawn to some of the sickest patients. And by that, I mean the more what we refer to as severe mental illnesses like bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and substance use disorders. And many of those patients seek treatment in a hospital setting for a variety of reasons. The hospitals provide a safety net. Whether that's the intended purpose of the hospital or not, that is the function they end up serving. Watching those patients come in and be very, very ill and recover and start improving within days is extremely rewarding. And working within a hospital setting, you also have access to referrals for medical care, and you can really wrap treatment around that patient and really get them back on track. The flip side of that is the services that are available to those types of patients outside of the hospital setting are very limited. And so you see a certain number of patients return and you realize that the hospital is the only place where mm-hmm. they get their care, and that does not work well for the patient or for the hospital. The decision to open up a private practice 2 years ago came from a moment after a very busy day in the hospital and being on call and mapping out a plan to see what practice would look like outside of a hospital setting. My biggest concern would be that I would see patients that weren't as ill or didn't need as much help. The euphemism or phrase that's often used is the worried well. And I can tell you that's not the case. We see patients of all types here in our practice. We see patients with depression, anxiety, bipolar, schizophrenia, substance use disorders. We're doing couples therapy. We'll be expanding our services this summer to be able to see children and adolescents. And it's been remarkable. The journey over the past 2 years has been exciting, rewarding, and we watch people get better every day.
Well, arguably, this is one of the most beautiful medical offices I've ever been in, and you'll see some video as we're speaking here of different shots around the practice. Tell us about the other professionals you have on board. I know you have a couple of medical social workers, a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner. You're bringing another person on board. Tell us about your staff.
2 years ago, when I was getting ready to open the practice, I got a call from Bridget Schmidt. She and I had worked together at Trident Hospital, and she was also looking to go into private practice and was looking to rent space within someone's office. And I told her I had a great deal for her. She could have space for free as long as she worked with me in my practice.
Good deal.
So Bridget and I have worked together for years, And the last 2 years having her here has made everything just go that much better. We're able to refer people to each other within the practice setting to give people the medications and therapies they need. And she's been helpful, so helpful along the way, just in terms of helping grow and guide the growth of the practice. Mm-hmm. More recently, Brooklyn Milner, who we also worked with at Trident Hospital, was venturing out in a private practice, and we have brought her on board to help expand our therapy services. We're so excited to have Brooklyn with us, and so happy that Trident gave us the opportunity to all meet. Megan Nyers just started with us this month. So Megan is a newly minted psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner, but is a veteran of the mental health field for many years. And she is helping us to be able to expand our services for patients who need medications as well as therapy. So with the four of us, we are able to meet with a patient and then decide what's the best fit, what do they need, what type of therapy, who's best for them to manage their medications. And then this summer, we are bringing on a child and adolescent psychiatrist. She will be completing her training at the Medical University this summer, and we are actively looking for a second office. As lovely and large as this office is, we're already looking for more space. And that will also give our patients different opportunities geographically in terms of where they'd like to come in. As we're talking about space here, when I opened the office 2 years ago, this was at a time when a number of psychiatrists had gone completely to telehealth. Telehealth was literally a lifesaver during the COVID pandemic. It allowed people to continue to access their mental health care. It worked so well that a number of my colleagues just didn't renew leases or sold office space. When I opened this practice, I very intentionally wanted to have space for people to come in. Telehealth works very well. For a number of patients and for most providers, there still is a preference for that in-person visit. Mm-hmm. The nuances of the visit, that face-to-face contact, as a someone who's diagnosing and treating patients, all the little details of that visit, the way they talk, the way they walk, the way they respond to me are all very important. You can capture a lot of that via telehealth, but not all of it. So we're excited to have a beautiful, comfortable space where people can come in, get comfortable, feel like they are, you know, part of the clinic and part of our practice.
Good. So let's say I'm a patient seeking services. When I come into the practice, do I see you first as the psychiatrist, and then you determine the course of treatment and who I should follow up with? Or what does that look like, Dr. Kluver?
Often I'll be the first point of contact for patients coming into the practice. When in doubt, or if a patient calls and tells me they don't know what's going on, they just know they need help, or they've been told to seek treatment, I'll meet with them and help, as you said, direct the course of treatment from there. That being said, I tell people when they first call, there's no wrong way to start. Don't overthink it. If you think you want therapy, meet with one of my therapists. If they feel that you would benefit from a diagnostic meeting to clarify what's going on, or that they feel a medication evaluation is in order, we can arrange that. And so I tell people, whatever you're most comfortable doing, come in, meet with one of us, and we will take it from there.
So what are the top reasons that people reach out to you? Is it depression, for example, or what just triggers someone to pick up the phone and notify you?
As we come up on the two-year mark, I'll be going through some of the data that I've accumulated over time. But even without knowing the numbers, mm-hmm. I can tell you the number one reason for people calling is anxiety. Mm-hmm. Anxiety is a symptom, not a disorder, and there are multiple different types of anxiety disorders. But the most common thing I hear when I pick up the phone is, I know I'm anxious, I don't know what's going on, can you help me? Depression would be the second. Mm-hmm. And I would say substance use would be the third, although that usually is not the primary complaint when they call. It's usually uncovered once they're here. And what we call comorbid and wrapped up in their depression and anxiety or whatever else is going on. We do a lot of couples therapy work. We have a lot of patients, increasing number of patients coming in for therapy, more for things that we refer to as adjustment disorder, phase of life changes, people who have moved to South Carolina to retire and find that they are anxious and depressed for the first time in their life. So a lot of life changes and life circumstance therapy as well.
Are there some things that any of us can do, maybe without reaching out to a mental health professional, but just to help with anxiety, depression? We're filled with it with the news, social media. Any recommendations you have just for general health from that standpoint?
Yeah, so I look at this as more preventive mental health recommendations.
Right.
So if you're so anxious or depressed that you're not able to do what you need to do or not functioning as well as you have been, that requires treatment. That being said, you know, everyday things that I tell people to do in addition to treatment to lessen their anxiety or to help them from becoming so anxious that they need treatment, it's, you know, as they say, not rocket science.
Right.
But the data is there. Good diet, exercise, human contact. One of the biggest things with COVID was people being so restricted, and even people who were somewhat socially anxious who kind of liked having an excuse not to socialize and interact, that did them no favors. And they really became more anxious during that time. So contact, avoiding social isolation. Mm-hmm. People who are somewhat anxious are more prone to feel a little bit better when they do things like have a sip of alcohol or use other substances. And so resisting that urge, doing all things in moderation, or cutting out things that have become bad habits, especially things like alcohol, are very important.
Sure. You mentioned you have the child and adolescent psychiatrist coming on board this summer. What are we seeing now with kids and adolescents these days? I know social media is talked about a lot, transgender issues and so forth. What's happening in that age group?
Put one broad category on it, and I'll call it overload.
Mm.
A lot of our young kids and teens are just overloaded with information, expectations, just information that they have trouble filtering through, which leads to a great deal of anxiety, depression, confusion about any number of things about themselves and the people around them. I'll add to my list of things to do as a preventive measure to limit overall anxiety levels is limiting your exposure to news and social media. It's important to be, in my opinion, caught up on world events and what's going on, but the so-called doom scroll of looking for that additional piece of information or going down a rabbit hole of misinformation is very detrimental. And for our kids and teens who have grown up with phones and devices in their hands, it's just second nature for them to always be checking, always be looking, and that is clearly leading to a number of mental health problems that we're seeing. We also are seeing a rise in the diagnosis of attention deficit disorders, autism spectrum disorders. I think we have a lot of research that needs to go into understanding why that is. Mm-hmm. It is not just reduced stigma. It is not just us recognizing it more. We are seeing a higher incidence and prevalence of these disorders as well.
Now, being a psychiatrist also, you're a medical doctor, so I imagine you have some patients who come in with perhaps a mental health illness, but it's actually another disease condition, is that correct? And so how do you address that with lab work and referrals to others?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question. And the simplest answer to that is, even with a reduced stigma, and people increasingly likely to come get treatment, most people have done a very thorough workup prior to coming in, because this sounds strange, but they actually hope it's a medical problem causing their anxiety or depression or psychosis or mania. So usually it entails me reviewing records and notes from other providers, general practitioners, or specialists. If there is a pattern, and part of our training as medical doctors is you recognize patterns that make you think that it could be more likely that it's a medical disease. Using depression as an example, if someone comes in and they're depressed, they've gained a lot of weight, they are have a very low tolerance for cold or temperature changes, they have some edema or swelling of their extremities, that is a pattern very consistent with something like hypothyroidism. So while I don't do full physical examinations in the office, part of the importance of seeing someone in person is picking up on symptoms or cues or other things that may make us think that a medical illness is at the is the root cause of what's going on.
Well, another reason to reach out. So now, of course, you're based in Charleston, and you mentioned that obviously in-person visits are always preferred, but you offer telehealth and you work with people all across the state. Is that correct?
That is correct. So as much as it is difficult to find mental health providers in Charleston, it's even more so the case throughout the rest of the state. So increasingly, we are getting calls from really all over the state. It's slowly sort of expanding out from the epicenter of Charleston, and similar to the word of mouth here locally, I know once I see a patient in Columbia or Greenville or Pawleys Island, that within weeks of that person seeing me, that I'm very likely to get calls from their friends, neighbors, or associates.
Yeah. Well, how do people reach you, Dr. Kluver?
So you can access us and request an appointment through our website at kluverpsychiatric.com. You can call 843-972-4404 and ask to speak to anyone here in the office. We all manage our own schedules, and I think that's important. Mm-hmm. That allows us to be the first contact, the first voice that someone hears, and allows us to help triage the situation and get them the help they need as quickly as possible.
That's refreshing. All right. Well, Dr. Jeffrey Kluver, thank you so much for joining us on the HealthLinks podcast.
My pleasure.
Thank you for joining us. Remember, our podcasts are also video-based, and so you can log in and not only hear our guests, but of course see some of the pictures and video that go along with the subject as well. I'm DJ Thatcher. Thank you for joining.